For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. U.S. President Donald Trump says the national security advisor he fired earlier this week was treated very, very unfairly by the media. At a press conference with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the president deliberately took questions from reporters representing pro-Trump media outlets. Our Washington correspondent Simon Marks reports.
For the second time this week, the president held a news conference with a visiting foreign leader and deliberately avoided reporters who were likely to ask him tough questions about his relationship with Russia. He did, however, blame the press for the demise of the national security advisor he himself fired on Monday.
Michael Flynn, General Flynn, is a wonderful man. I think he's been treated very, very unfairly by the media, as I call it, the fake media in many cases. And I think it's really a sad thing that he was treated so badly.
On the outlook for Middle East peace, President Trump indicated he won't be bound by America's traditional backing of a two-state solution.
So I'm looking at two-state and one-state, and I like the one that both parties like. I'm very happy with the one that both parties like. I can live with either one.
And Prime Minister Netanyahu, beaming during the press conference, said he'd work with President Trump to avoid clashing on the issue of settlement building. Simon Marks, Washington.
For Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Iran remains a key concern.
Under attack by one malevolent force, radical Islamic terror. Mr. President, you've shown great clarity and courage in confronting this challenge head-on. You call for confronting Iran's terrorist regime.
Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, plans to meet with his U.S. counterpart, Rex Tillerson, on the sidelines of a G20 meeting in Germany. Our correspondent in Berlin, Ira Spitzer, has a preview.
It would be the first time the two men have held talks in an official capacity. Earlier, the foreign ministry said Lavrov and Tillerson would likely discuss the situation in Syria, among other things. Ira Spitzer, Berlin.
Malaysian police have arrested a woman over the murder of the North Korean leader's half-brother. Kim Jong-nam was killed at Kuala Lumpur's airport on Monday. Nick Harper reports.
Malaysian authorities arrested the 28-year-old woman at the same airport where Kim Jong-nam was killed. She was reportedly carrying Vietnamese travel documents and had been identified from CCTV footage, in which she was seen wearing a T-shirt with the letters LOL printed on it. Police say they are still looking for a few other suspects. Earlier reports from South Korean media suggested Kim Jong-nam had been killed by two female assassins who fled in a taxi. Meanwhile, unnamed US government officials have said they believe he was assassinated by North Korean agents. Mac Harper, New York.
North Korea has requested Malaysia return the body. This is FSN.
Well, thank you very much, Priscilla Huff. Nice to hear from you. And good evening to you, wherever you are in the world. It's exactly, well, it's the top of the hour. It's 2 minutes past the hour, in fact. You're with the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and Alternate Current Radio. Got an absolutely fantastic show lined up for you in the next couple of hours. Thanks for joining me.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
If you only see one film this year, make it Traffic 2. Trust me. Trust me. Put aside some of the money you would have blown on crap Hollywood blockbusters and spend it on Traffic 2. Extraordinary film, just been released. Emma Ibbotson, the producer of it, joins the programme. The film, of course, made by Pete Middleton Pictures. You'll remember Traffic, which blew the lid off the forced adoption industry in this country. Traffic 2 is an outstanding follow-up. Emma will talk to me about that this hour. And then in the second hour, we'll take calls from you. When I say we, she will take calls from you. So you can phone Emma, put a question to her about forced adoption. Or if it has affected you personally, you can phone up and share your story with the amazing Emma Abitson. How do you contact the program in the second hour? It couldn't be easier. If you're calling from the United Kingdom, it's 0161 408 2017. That's 0161 408 2017. If you're calling from outside the UK, it's +44 161 408 2017. But you needn't spend a penny. I know what spend a penny means. You needn't spend any money. You can connect to the programme on Skype. Our Skype line is Chat with Richie, all one word. No T in Richie, Chat with Richie. Now, the last time we did this was about a year ago when we talked about this issue and invited your calls. So I'm looking forward to hearing from you in the second hour. Again, the number to call after 8 p.m. GMT, that's in the second hour, is 0161 408 2017, +44 161 408 2017, or Skype the program. My Skype handle is Chat with Richie. Couldn't be easier, he says. An old cliche, that, but it couldn't. It could not be easier than that, all right? Good stuff. Right. We are broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Bookmark it. Check out davidicke.com/headlines. We're on alternatecurrentradio.com, Fab Radio 2, and of course, TuneIn Radio. Now, the eagle-eyed amongst you have been saying, Richie, we've gotten a glimpse of your new website. Yes, I think it's online. Aaron is still putting the final touches to it, but a very smart-looking richieallen.co.uk even is shaping up and should be ready and finished and all of that within the next day or two. But I think it's been online today. Might come offline again later. I don't know. Aaron is working on that. All right. Remember, Emma Abitson, Traffic 2. By the way, to purchase a copy of Traffic 2, go to petemiddletonpictures.co.uk. All right. So, Benjamin Netanyahu is in Washington, D.C., the Israeli Prime Minister, and he's been chatting with Donald Trump in front of the assembled media. This only a short time ago. The BBC are reporting their take on it is that Trump has asked Netanyahu to hold off on settlements. Now, this is the spin, this is the garbage, the rubbish, the lies that you get from mainstream media. They are spinning it that there was some sort of conflict, even if a minor one, between the old buddies Donald and Bibi. Trump has asked him to hold off on settlements, is the screaming headline. Nonsense. Nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. There were far more interesting things to come out of that press conference today. Not that it was much of a press conference. As you might have heard Priscilla Huff tell you in the news at the top of the hour, Trump continues to take questions only from his friends in the media, while morons in the alternative media cheerlead this and say it's a great thing. It isn't. You know what it is? You know what it is? It's fascism, is what it is. Anyway, not going to go down that road. Not today. Listen to the first 45 seconds of what Trump said when welcoming Bibi and addressing the assembled media. Have a listen.
Thank you. Today I have the honor of welcoming my friend, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, to the White House. With this visit, the United States again reaffirms our unbreakable bond with our cherished ally, Israel. The partnership between our two countries, built on our shared values, has advanced the cause of human freedom, dignity, and peace.
They've advanced the cause of human freedom, dignity, and peace. Between the two countries, they have killed, murdered, maimed, injured, disappeared off the face of the earth more people than every other country on planet Earth combined. Have Israel and the United States. He carries on. Listen to this.
These are the building blocks of democracy. The state of Israel is a symbol to the world of resilience in the face of oppression. I can think of no other state that's gone through what they've gone.
Well, we can think of one. We can think of Gaza. We can think of Palestine and the Gazans and the Palestinians who have shown overwhelming resilience in the face of genocide, torture, kidnap and murder by the terrorist state of Israel. Is Trump for real? So Sky News snipped the 25-minute long assembly, and this is what they took out. This is the general gist of what was spoken about, according to Sky, in the press conference. This is what the media want you to hear.
With this visit, the United States again reaffirms our unbreakable bond with our cherished ally, Israel. The partnership between our two countries, built on our shared values, has advanced the cause of human freedom, dignity, and peace. These are the building blocks of democracy.
This is the source of the conflict. The persistent Palestinian refusal to recognize a Jewish state in any boundary, this persistent rejectionism, that's the reason we don't have peace. Now that has to change. I want it to change.
The Israelis are going to have to show some flexibility, which is hard. It's hard to do. They're going to have to show the fact that they really want to make a deal. I think our new concept that we've been discussing actually for a while is something that allows them to show more flexibility than they have in the past, because you have a lot bigger canvas to play with. I think the Palestinians have to get rid of some of that hate that they're taught from a very young age. They're taught tremendous hate. I've seen what they're taught. And you can talk about flexibility there, too, but it starts at a very young age, and it starts in the schoolroom.
That is what Sky News presented to its audience at 6 p.m. today after the press conference as the highlights. Netanyahu saying that for there to be any movement, the Palestinians must accept Israel's right to exist. And Trump saying that Palestinians are taught to hate Israelis from the time they are in school. This is what Sky News presented to you. It's as simple as this. There will be a peace process when the Palestinians accept Israel's right to exist, and Trump telling you that the Palestinians are full of hate. Now, I can tell you this. Even while I was on mainstream radio, I interviewed Palestinian men and women. I interviewed Palestinian men and women whom were living in Gaza. I've never been there. And I interviewed Palestinian men and women who had left Gaza and who lived in different parts of the world. You know what staggered me about Palestinians? And many journalists have said this. What staggered me is speaking to them at great length before interviews, after interviews, not just when you're on air, is the overwhelming lack of bitterness and hatred. The overwhelming lack of bitterness and hatred for the Israelis, despite what's been done to them. Nearly every Palestinian, to a man and woman, whom I've met over the years, believes in the better nature of Israel and the Israelis, and believes that eventually common sense, decency, good and righteousness will prevail. I never met anybody who wanted to see the destruction of Israel, and I've interviewed dozens and dozens of them. Extraordinary bullshit being put out by Sky News today. Unbelievable nonsense. What they didn't play, and the soundbite from the conference that they won't be playing on their nightly news bulletins, is Benjamin Netanyahu ramping up the anti-Iranian rhetoric and telling a colossal lie without offering any proof of it. And that is that the Iranians inscribe in Hebrew on their missiles phrases like "wipe Israel off the map," which is reported in the Daily Mail last week. No proof offered again by anybody, not the Mail, not Benjamin Netanyahu. Listen to this crap from the Prime Minister of Israel, who, let's be honest, Benjamin Netanyahu is the most successful terrorist on planet Earth. You have to admire him, I suppose. This is him talking about Iran.
President Trump has led a very important effort in the past few weeks, just coming into the presidency, He pointed out their violations, Iranian violations on ballistic missile tests. By the way, these ballistic missiles are inscribed in Hebrew. Israel must be destroyed. The Iranian foreign minister Zarif said, well, our ballistic missiles are not intended against any country. No. They write on the missile in Hebrew, Israel must be destroyed.
Garbage, 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 lies, lies. Nobody has offered any proof of this. Nobody. Lies. And not a single member of the assembled press. But then again, how could they? How could they? Oh, they're crap anyway, Richie. You might say. They might be. But now you have Donald, the narcissist, chaos-creating, lunatic president of America, not taking questions from anybody other than those people he's pre-approved. So nobody's going to question the lunatic Netanyahu on the dangerous and completely false claim that the Iranians are inscribing on their intercontinental ballistic missiles, destroy Israel. It's garbage. He continues.
So challenging Iran on its violations of ballistic missiles, imposing sanctions on Hezbollah, preventing them, making them pay for the terrorism that they foment throughout the Middle East and beyond, well beyond. And I think that if we work together, and not just the United States and Israel, but so many others in the region who see eye to eye on the great magnitude and danger of the Iranian threat, then I think we can roll back Iran's aggression and danger. And that's something that is important for Israel, the Arab states, but I think it's vitally important for America. These guys are developing ICBMs. They're developing, they want to get to a nuclear arsenal, not a bomb, 100 bombs. And they want to have the ability to launch them everywhere on Earth, and including, and especially, eventually, the United States.
Absolute nonsense, no proof of that whatsoever. The last thing in the world the Islamic Republic of Iran wants to do is attack the United States or Israel or anybody else. Even if I was to be convinced that Iran harbored ambitions of developing a nuclear weapon, I would believe, not because I'm naive and because I hate the United States and because I hate Israel, I don't. I would believe that Iran was doing it because Israel has them. And of course, Israel doesn't acknowledge that it has them, won't admit that it has them. But of course, we know they do. So if Iran harbored any ambitions to make a bomb or 100 bombs, who could blame them? Who could blame them? Pakistan, India and Israel have the bomb. The lies told by these psychotic mass murderers. Not a whisper from the media assembled or the media reporting from thousands of miles away in London about these lies. Where are the foreign correspondents with the courage, with the balls, with the cojones to stand up and say, hang on a second, the Iranians have never really, they've never been interested in war or attacking anybody. Why are we hearing this now? Wouldn't you just keel over in absolute shock if a foreign correspondent had the gall to say, excuse me, Mr. Netanyahu there. Isn't it true that the only nation in the region, the only nation in the region that consistently attacks and violates the borders of its neighbours is the completely illegal state of Israel? Isn't that right? And I'll get the usual emails tomorrow now from those who support the state of Israel, saying that's terrible, Richie. You shouldn't be saying that. It's wrong. Israel has no right to exist whatsoever. It was illegally created. Its only case for existence is the bullshit biblical statement delivered by God to Abraham. That nonsense about unto, what's the quote again? Unto thy seed have I given this land. From the river of Egypt onto the great river, the Euphrates. That's it. That's the garbage. And even in the conference today, Netanyahu repeated a time-honoured lie. That is that the Jews come from Judea. No, they don't. Jews are called Jews, he said, because we inhabited Judea. No, you didn't. It's another lie. Another massive lie, which will never be challenged in the acquiescent media owned by the same companies, the same military-industrial complex, partners of governments like Israel and the United States. That's what we have. That's what we have. Two tyrants, Trump and Netanyahu, plotting today how to wind up Iran. How to build a consensus amongst the NATO partners. Now, I know Israel isn't part of NATO. How to get NATO and Western countries aligned to go after Iran next. That's why the lunatic one, the nutty one, is in Washington, D.C. And it ain't funny. It isn't funny. And those buffoons, those cretins in the independent media who scream about we must support Trump as he fills his cabinet with Zionists and Goldman Sachs bankers, as he lies blaming the media for the sacking of Michael Flynn when he sacked him himself and didn't back him, when he lies about going after paedophiles and warmongers and criminals like the Clintons and others, and doesn't. I don't want to hurt them. They're good people. They're good people. This is what you're dealing with. I'm going to take a break now. Maybe a long break. 22 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, the tune-in app. And very soon again, my own website, richieallen.co.uk. Going to take a very quick break. When we come back, plenty more. Remember, special program today. Emma Ibbitson is going to join me live, the producer of the brand new, just released Traffic 2. Serious stuff. You don't want to miss it. Back in 2.5 minutes.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole-of-market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Road to Ruin. But today I'm issuing a critical new warning to all British listeners. Britain is under attack and your personal and financial security is in grave danger. To find out why, visit britainunderattack.co.uk now. The threat of this devastating attack increases every day, and it's crucial you act before it's too late. To see what you can do about it, visit britainunderattack.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. See my full warning at britainunderattack.co.uk today.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
All eyes on Manchester, Saturday, March 4th, 2017. The Awakening at Bowler's Exhibition Centre, Manchester. Join the stars of the Ancient Aliens TV series and the leading figures in the field of ufology and ancient alien theories. Eric Von Daniken, author of the hit book Chariots of the Gods, and Emmy Award winner Linda Moulton Howe. Get tickets now at www.awakeningufo.com.
Welcome back then. It's 24 minutes past the hour. I wasn't going to take some music before we get our first guest on, but I am. I'm going to take a little bit of John Lennon. When we come back, Emma Ibbitson, the producer of Traffic 2, the brand new film from Pete Middleton Films. Go to petemiddletonfilms.co.uk. Buy the film, folks. I'm telling you. If you were planning on going to see a film this week in the cinema, which will cost you 20 quid, that's inclusive, you and your girlfriend, you and your boyfriend, husband or wife, put that 20 quid away, you'll save half of it, buy Traffic 2. I'm telling you, buy Traffic 2. It is the most incredible film you'll see this year. Brilliant. Right, we're going to take some music. John Lennon then. John Lennon, I'm going to play this for my first guest because I think she's amazing. This is Woman by John Lennon. On your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, the TuneIn app and alternate current radio. The time is exactly 25 past the hour.
Woman, I can hardly express my mixed emotions and my thoughtlessness. After all, I'm forever in your debt. And woman, I will try to express my inner feeling and thankfulness for showing me the meaning of success.
Because of time constraints, I know that sounds silly when you've got 90 minutes or more left in the programme, but because of that, we'll lose the music for now. Want to remind you that coming up after the top of the hour, we'll be throwing the phone lines over to you, and you'll be able to put questions to our guest today, and not only put questions to her about her work and her films, but also, if you've been affected by forced adoption, if you've had negative experiences dealing with social services and the agents of social services and social services in local authorities, please, in the second hour, get in touch with us. There's a number, if you're calling in the UK, is 0161 408 2017. That's 0161 408 2017. It's +44 161 408 2017 outside the country. But you don't need to spend any money. The Skype name for the programme is Chat with Richie. So if you're on Skype, you just need to find Chat with Richie on Skype. Connect to us there. And I want to hear from you in the second hour. Our only guest today first came on this programme in early 2015. I wasn't exaggerating when I said yesterday that it was life-changing for me, because this issue, I had read bits and pieces. I had heard David Icke in London talk about it, but I hadn't focused on it. I didn't realise what was going on. She is the producer of Traffic, the astonishing, groundbreaking film which blew the lid off forced adoption even in the UK and the scale of it. Never had anything been seen like that before. No film had ever captured what is going on in this country like that before. The film was made by Pete Middleton Pictures. Go to petemiddletonpictures.co.uk. The sequel, Traffic 2, has just become available to buy. In fact, it became available to buy this week. Again, go to petemiddletonpictures.co.uk. I've seen the film. My word is solid gold. It is extraordinarily brilliant. It picks up from where the first film left off, and it scientifically and clinically dissects the forced adoption industry in this country using a wide variety of brilliant speakers, men and women, looking at cases, using audio captured conversations between social workers and the victims of forced adoption and more. Traffic 2 is the must-see film of 2015, and we're thrilled to welcome back to the programme the producer of it, my friend, and I'm proud to say friend, Emma Ibbitson. Emma, welcome back.
Hi, Richie.
Good to be with you again tonight. Thanks for coming back on. I'm just wondering, do I need to adjust one or two little buttons there for the volume? But I think I might be okay.
Need to turn it down at this end, actually. Oh, is that better?
That's a little... I tell you what I'm going to do, Emma. Just for the hell of it, I'm going to hang up and dial you back. Yeah, I think we might have a bad line there. It does happen sometimes. Even in this day and age, in 2017, you do sometimes get a bad line. But we'll persevere. I can always adjust the occasional button here and there. Let's see, is that any better? Emma, welcome back.
Welcome back.
I think it's slightly better. Yeah, I'm just going to take a little bit of bass off of that, a little bit of treble there. Listen, congratulations on the film. It's absolutely outstanding. I meant every word of what I said. How does it feel to finally have it finished, to have it edited, topped and tailed, Emma, as we say in this business, and have it out there? How does it feel to have it out there now?
Sorry, it feels... I don't know if the right word is relief, because it's not really. It's 2 years of hard work, and you think, yeah, we've finally done it. We've done it, we've released it for everyone else to see exactly what's going on.
2 years in the making. I remember a year ago we were speaking about this. We were talking about when would it be coming out, and you were still filming it then. Yeah, I've got to give great credit to the director, Pete Middleton, of course, but also Cookie Keaton, who narrates and interviews the various contributors to it. It's absolutely outstanding, Emma.
Thank you.
So there's a bit of relief there, I guess, that it's out there now. How does it feel as opposed to when you put out Traffic? Because when you put out Traffic, you knew there were going to be a lot of problems. You knew there was going to be resistance to it. And it was very stressful, I'm guessing. Has it been different this time, getting it out and getting it online for people to buy? Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, we were due to release last year, but then we decided, no, the film on its own is just not enough. We need to show people the bits we took out. We need to let people know everything. So Pete decided that he wanted to make it a box set. So he did an additional disc too that's got all the deleted scenes, entire interviews, that he thinks is imperative that people hear and people listen to. And then he created a DVD assessment game where you can be assessed like a professional. It's not at all tied to social workers, but it's our own version of what it's like to be assessed by when these people come into your home and they're asking you questions. It's a little game that you can play and you get your end result at the end.
Fantastic. Now, I was lucky to be given a copy of the film before Christmas. I've not seen the box set. I'm really excited about that. I think it's a fantastic idea, that, because nobody can say, oh, well, they've selectively now picked out what they were told by people like Christopher Booker and John Hemming and all these other contributors. Well, you're saying to people, well, look, here's the entire interview. Have a look at it yourself. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And basically, we've completely opened mine and Pete's story up as well. We've said, no, you scrutinised us with the first one, so now we've completely opened up our entire story on this too. You can hear exactly everything. So we've nothing to hide, Richie, as we've always said. We did nothing wrong. So we've said, no, we'll open up our story. We won't be so... Secretive's the wrong word. We won't be so... I can't find the right word, but... We decided that we'll let the entire world know what they did to us and not just what they did to everybody else.
And that was obviously central to making the sequel. But if you could explain the need for the sequel, I spoke to you today about what I feel about it. I mean, it's fantastic. It's almost like a completely different film. It is outstanding. Why, in general, did you feel that you had to make Traffic 2?
I think the big spur was when they banned the first one. We said, well, we're not tolerating that. You've shut it down because you don't want people knowing what you're doing. You don't want the general public, the sheeple, as I call them, knowing exactly what you're doing to these babies. So we're going to make a second one because you banned our first, which I won't say what I want to say, but it peeved us off a little bit. And because they've hidden the exposure, they wanted the exposure silent, so we said, no, we're going to give you a second and we're going to hit you twice as hard.
Fantastic. I'm going to keep mentioning this as we go along. It's PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. Please buy this film for two reasons, folks. One, it's an absolutely brilliant film. You won't see anything like it this year, I'm telling you, number one, and it's vital. But two, when people put everything on the line, and you know, in the independent media, you get these narcissists who keep building themselves up about, oh, we're doing all what we do for humanity and all this garbage, when really what they're doing is looking for a quick buck. With people like Pete Middleton and Emma Ibbitson, they've put it all on the line to get it to the public, to introduce the public to what's going on in this country, where more than 20,000 children a year are taken into care, most of them for no good reason. Buy this film, PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. So,
I mean, I'm just going to say there, Richard, about the amount of children that are taken into care. I mean, that's slowly increasing every week. I mean, I was researching family court hearings and came across, I won't say which court, but came across one court hearing that were having 50-plus family hearings a day to remove children, 50-plus a day.
And that's in one...
One court in one city, in one town, that was 50-plus a day, and there's 5 working days in a week.
So the 20,000 number must be outdated now, Emma.
It's got to be, Richie. It has to be.
Tell you what we're going to do. I've dug out, with your permission, 4 clips. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to play the first one, and it's of you. I've labelled these, and I made a note or two about them, so I knew exactly what I was talking about. And the clips deal with the scale of it. They deal with the injuries suffered by children while actually in care. And they deal with the money. But it's an extraordinary clip in the film of Emma. And we're not giving too much away here. We're not going to be playing too much of the film is 95 minutes long. We've got about 2.5 minutes of clips. But what you're first of all going to hear is you're going to hear Emma talking about when a parent whose child has been taken away and Emma's children were taken, she'll talk about that in a minute. When you report that they have been abused in care, what actually happens when you make that report? So I'm going to play this clip, Emma, and you can have a chat about it afterwards. So this is from the brand new Traffic 2, PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. Have a listen to this. Listen carefully.
We know there is abuse in foster homes. We highlighted it in our first film.
My name's Ian Muttershaw. I'm a sergeant with the Police Child Protection Unit. Can we just go through it?
My 14-year-old son had made an allegation that someone else in the same foster placement as him had touched his genital area.
What we didn't cover is when the social services moved him, he was abused again. But this time, they told Emma he was lying.
I was told that there's a boy there who was around 17 had done it again. When he went to his foster carer to tell his foster carer, she turned around and told him, lucky to be in foster care, so just keep your mouth shut.
She said that word?
Yeah.
How do you know she said that? I've got the actual daily report. What the foster carer said, you're lucky to be in foster care.
When your son reported being sexually assaulted in care, he was told to shut up about it, you're lucky to be in foster care. And what, of course, we can't show on the radio is you had the document to prove that's exactly what he was told.
Yes.
Right?
But the thing is, Richie, I got the phone call from the social worker saying what had happened. And, I mean, obviously that's in the film as well, not give too much away, but her blasé attitude, it's like she'd phoned up to order a Chinese. Oh, yeah, this has happened. We've dealt with it. Don't you bother talking to him. And then I got a letter saying, don't talk to him about it at all in contact. Don't discuss this, don't raise this issue. If you do, we'll cease your contact and you won't see him anymore.
Because the film covers so much. It covers the reasons why the children are taken, the real reasons. It covers the experiences the children have in care. It talks about the ease with which it seems. And I want to talk to you about this in a minute. I want to talk extensively about this. How easy it is to foster children in this country. And not only that, but, you know, the whole question of do the new foster families who see the advertisements in the bus shelters, do they have any idea when they sign up for it? Do they understand what's going on? And that more than likely they have a disturbed child. By saying disturbed, I mean completely traumatised because they've been wrongfully taken from their parents. So here you have, and I mean this isn't an isolated incident, you have evidence that the boy's been sexually assaulted, it doesn't get any more serious than that, and they have a blasé attitude to it, and the young lad, God love him, is told basically, shut up, you're lucky to have a foster home.
Yeah, because she were protecting the other child that was in the same placement as my son. he was a bit older, he'd been there a bit longer. She said she were protecting him, but as I explained to the social services, how can he possibly, he wouldn't have, how could he make that up if it never happened in the first place? She said it didn't happen to him. I said, but it's, you know your own children, Richie, you know what they're capable of. And she said, no, he's made it up, Emily, it's all a lie, don't pursue this. And then I went to the police station, the police turned me away. I went to the Police Complaints Commission office, they turned me away. And the irony was, I went to the NSPCC as my last resort, The NSPCC referred me back to the social worker who originally told me that it happened.
And this is something we've mentioned before, you and I, because these people, the people at the police station, the desk or the duty sergeant, they're not really aware of what's going on. They're not. Some of them are, but some of them are not. And they look upon you as a bad mother, right? She's a bad mother. She's coming in here now. She had her kid taken off her. It must have been for something. And now she's coming in making allegations. She's just a bad mother. That's the way it is, right?
Yeah, she's kicking off. She's in a bad mood. She's trying for attention. Just ignore her.
Cookie says something early on in the film. And I hadn't considered it. Not because I'm naive, but because, despite I'm a big, lumpy Irish guy and I can be a bit hard sometimes, I am soft and I think the best of people. Cookie says, he makes the comparison, and I'm going back to you making the complaint, which, you know, from watching the film, I have no doubt that your son was telling the truth about the abuse. Cookie makes the point about not picking rotten fruit. When you see bruises on a banana or an apple, you don't take it. So they know that these children are going to move from foster home to foster home, but they want to keep it quiet, Emma, any allegations about trauma or abuse, because the families who are going to take foster kids, they want Little House on the Prairie type children, right?
Oh, definitely. They want the perfect.
Yeah.
They want, I think, what they want. They want the perfect, without stereotyping, blonde hair, blue-eyed little girl or little boy that's going to become part of their family network.
So we better not have anything on foil about abuse.
Sorry, Richard, but we've spoken to foster carers who've quit because they've asked the wrong questions. They've said, you've given me this child, let's say a little girl called Donna, but there's nothing wrong with her. She's wanting to go home. Why is she in here? And they said, right, you can't be a foster carer anymore now. We're taking that child from you, put him in another placement, and we're kicking you off our list. Because they've just asked, why is this child in foster care?
I'm going to play another clip. I'm going to mention again, this is courtesy of, and with the permission of, PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. This is Traffic 2. This is a clip about children. And there are tens and tens and tens of thousands of children taken into care each year. And this is a clip about the scale of the harm that comes to them. Remember, these are children wrongly taken from their parents to prevent harm, which is a nonsense. They are then sent to a lovely, fluffy foster home, and there they're going to be okay. Not really. Have a listen to this clip. This is staggering stuff. This is a clip about the hurt that comes to children in care on a massive scale.
We were told the girls were going to be moved. They couldn't stay with this foster placement, which they still did. And later on, these same foster people assaulted the younger one, and then they had to be moved.
My child fell downstairs. There's a mark on his eye there. When I reported to the police were interested. We have the evidence. We've got the pictures to prove it. None of this has been investigated.
The kids seem to be in more danger while they're in care than they were at home.
The list just goes on and on.
There's all too many families out there that are going and being approved as foster carers and adopters, and then they're going on to sexually abuse, physically abuse and emotionally abuse children.
Why are they not trying harder to stop it from happening?
Why indeed, Emma? Why are they not trying harder? What sort of scrutiny would I undergo? Richie Allen tomorrow says, tell you what, I fancy a couple of grand a month, or whatever it is. I think it's about that, maybe a bit more. It's lovely, lovely jubbly. I want to, with, of course, my partner, we want to foster children. What sort of scrutiny are we subjected to? Surely, Emma, surely we would be subjected to the same scrutiny that you were subjected to when they took your children.
No, Richie, of course not. I mean, as long as you've got a spare bedroom, as long as you've got one of the main carers would be at home. So if your wife decided she wanted to stay at home, you was the go-to-work guy, as long as she was at home. I mean, I won't give too much away, but I, as research for traffic, went undercover and applied to be a foster carer. Me. And I was told that within... I would have the original... I passed the initial call bit of the data information and everything else like that. Then she said I'd get a visit from a social worker, and then I go on a little course that lasts for about 6 months, about a 6 month course, just teaching me how to parent. And then I could have a child with me within as little as 3 days.
So from start to finish, within 7 or 8 or 9 months, you can have a child. You can basically have somebody's child.
And I could have 1, 2, 3, 4, as many as I feel like I want to take. And I was told it'd be about £1,400 a week.
£1,400 a week.
They can't expect us to do it for nothing.
Did you say £400 to £800 a week?
No, £1,400. Up to £1,400 a week.
Jesus. Right. I work.
I didn't even get. I didn't even earn that to raise me on.
No. I genuinely work 70 to 80 hours a week, and I wouldn't see anything like that. Not that I expect it. It's staggering. So the numbers of people that have contacted you over the years to say that they found out through being told by their children or being told by social workers or foster parents themselves, children come to harm. What sort of things happen to children in foster care?
Well, there was one, I'll give you one example, one mum. Her daughter went into foster care with mental health issues. She kept telling the social worker she has mental health issues. I think she was around 13. She needs help. No, she doesn't. She's fine. She's just traumatised because she got into care. She's just traumatised. That's all they kept saying. She hung herself, Richie, at 14.
She hung herself.
She hung herself because the social workers just wanted interest. They kept saying she's troubled, she's traumatised, she's a bit of a nuisance, and she hung herself.
I want to say again, folks, I want to say again, the film covers every angle, extensively, scientifically, and it is an evidence-based film. It doesn't get any better than this. The production values are extraordinary. What they've done here with this film, and, you know, they talk about, I mean, there are times when, I mean, there's a terrible scene in the film where a mother talks about her child dying in foster care, and the police and the local authorities' interest lay solely in comforting and helping the foster family, and nobody gave a damn about her and how she felt about it.
That foster family were actually smuggled out of the country, Richie, because grandma of the family went round to the house and the social worker said, she told the social worker she felt threatened and intimidated at the abuse she was suffering from grandma, so they took him out of the country.
This is 2017, and we're talking about people having to be leaving the country under cover of darkness, people getting their children because they've been, and of course increasingly as, because of people like you and what you've done with your films and Traffic, of course, and now Traffic 2, is... through alerting people to this, more and more people now, at the first sign of serious trouble, are getting the hell out of Dodge, and they're going to Ireland, or they're going to France. And this is 2017. You know, we talked before about the Magdalens in Ireland, and the abuse of the Catholic Church, and workhouses where pregnant mothers, young mothers were sent, unmarried mothers, and, you know, were sent off to these places. What we're talking about sounds like something from a bygone age, doesn't it?
It does. It's there's not a word I can put to it, Richie. It keeps me awake at night. I'm trying, me of all people, trying to understand how it's 2017 and I've got mums falling missing. They're taking the baby. Why? I don't know. Why? Well, they said I did X, Y, Z to my baby, but she's a week old. How could I have done all that? She's only just been born. They've taken her. I'm never going to see her again. And I think I've lost the words sometimes, Richie. I really am.
How difficult was it for you to make Traffic 2 and go through all the emotions again, as you did make in the first film? And how difficult is it for you to stay professional and to stay objective? Now, I know people will laugh now. I'm not saying it's... Of course, it's not an objective film. It can't be objective because there's only one... People say there's two sides to every story. No, there isn't. There's the truth. There's the truth, full stop. And you're telling the truth. So it's not about objectivity. But to maintain your professionalism through the making of it, because it is wonderfully put together and it is outstanding. How do you do that with your own personal story constantly pulling away at you, tugging away at you? How do you do that?
You can't, Richie. I mean, probably every interview we did, we'd all be crying at the end. We'd all have a cry and comfort each other. I don't think I've done one interview yet where I didn't. And you do try and put your story to the back, but it does help when you're interviewing parents, because you can genuinely, you can usually tell if they're telling the truth or not, or if they're just wanting to, because we have had, we call them bandwagon parents, Richie. We have had parents that have genuinely abused the children that have come to us and said, oh, the social worker's done this and the social worker's done that. But they're cold. There's no emotion from them. I'm thinking, well, if you genuinely did care for your children, you'd be in tears at this point.
David Mortimer is listening. David, how are you? Just retweeting some of the stuff he's sending me there. UKFamilyLawReform.co.uk is where you'll find David. Thanks for that, David. So many tweets coming in on this. Again, to follow Twitter, the conversations, go to twitter.com. Where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, press enter, and you can see what other people are tweeting. And you can take part, and you can converse with people, you can argue with people, you can agree with people. Go ahead and do it there. It's 8.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Emma and myself are going to continue to chat. If in the second hour, so in about 15 minutes time, if you fancy coming in on this, do phone 0161 408 2017. That's if you're in the UK. 0161 408 2017. If you're outside the UK, it's +44 161 408 2017. But you can Skype chat with Richie. That's chat with Richie. Traffic 2, produced by Emma Ibbitson, directed by Pete Middleton, and with the terrific and extremely talented Cookie Keaton, who narrates the film and also interviews and does an amazing job, to his credit. Now, I know he's got a great producer giving him all the facts and figures as well, but he does a marvellous job. He's a real star, Cookie, and he's really humble, and you can tell he's really interested in what's being said, and he's really interested in the people he's speaking to. He's got a bright future, the lad. There's no doubt about that. Let's hear a clip. Go to PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. I'm telling you, people, buy this film. I've never been like this before with any film ever. I'm telling you to buy it. Because if you don't, people like Pete Middleton and Emma Ibbitson will not make films in the future. It is as simple as that. Okay, they're not going to make £1 million out of this. They'll be lucky to cover their costs. That's how difficult it is outside the mainstream media. They've produced a film that would be completely at home on Channel 4 with Dispatches, would be completely at home on Panorama, would be brilliant on CBS 60 Minutes. It's wonderfully produced. They've sweat blood and tears to get it out there. Now go to PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk and buy a film and tell him Richie sent you. Here's a clip about the... Jesus, this kills me. The amount of kids who go missing in care. Emma's going to stand by. Listen to this. This is another clip courtesy of PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. Traffic 2. Thousands of kids going missing in care. Listen to this.
10,000. You know, 10, if one 000. Goes, if one goes missing, like the girl, like the one in Portugal, it's a big fuss.
10,000 children
right.
A year.
That's published. You know, I mean, and they go missing. Now, some of them are found, of course. You know, yeah, missing doesn't mean they disappear forever, but a good proportion do.
They're supposed to know the full background to the family. Yet, when I told the social worker about the foster carer's adoptive daughter sharing photos and videos of my son across Facebook, she didn't even know that there was an adoptive daughter living there. And this is a 21-year-old woman.
If social workers aren't checking these placements, how can they possibly know it's safer than the one they're taking them from?
She never met the foster carers for at least 5 to 6 weeks.
She's not done no background history on the family. She's just gone and put my son there.
What is the real motive?
And the cash register there at the end, and we'll come to that in a few minutes. 10,000 kids a year go missing. Now, as we heard Ian Joseph say, nobody's saying that they're all dying or they're all disappearing off the face of the earth. But whether, but some of them are, I have no doubt, but 10,000 children go missing from the so-called comfort and safety and security of social care. What's going on? Why so many, Emma? And why is this not, this is the $64 million question, why is this not a national scandal?
Well, you've got the government to keep it all a secret, haven't we, Richie? I mean, Bradford City Council lost, in a year, 90% of their foster care children. 90%! I mean, how do you lose 90%? And they're saying that most end up in the sex trade. They become farmed out, like in Rotherham. They end up going into the sex trade. We can't control these kids if they want to go into prostitution. What do you expect us to do? It's their lifestyle choice. And these are kids 9, 10, 11 year old.
What year was this in Bradford? Was it last year or the year before?
I think it was 2014, 2015. So we are going back a while. That's how long ago we started filming Traffic. But it was in a full year, 90%. It was in the media, so I'm quoting something that's
factual. Oh, listen, nobody's questioning the veracity of your claims. Everything is accounted for in Traffic 2. We're not even going to go there. Every claim you make is backed up by fact, and I know this. Yeah, it's staggering, yeah. 90% of people taken into care in Bradford went missing that year. 9 out of 10 kids, we don't know. We don't know where they are. So one of your contributors makes the claim in the film that, and again, this is something you and I have touched on in the past, but we haven't really gotten into it, but makes the claim, and it doesn't get any more serious, that some of these kids are being picked and are being sent to paedophile rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
It makes me sick to my stomach. I mean, these are babies. I mean, these are our children. I mean, I'll be totally honest. I mean, I had nightmares about it happening to my daughter when she first went into care. I mean, this is the wrong term to use, but I was thankful she was with a decent family that it wasn't going to happen with. But then again, you don't know, do you? But these are babies. These are, look at your children around you. Think, is your child asleep upstairs? A knock on the door, it could be your child, it happened. So I know that sounds scary, but that is what's happening in this country right now. No one's safe. Little Billy you've put in bed, or little Donna that's gone to sleep, it only takes a complaint through your school or a bitter, angry neighbour, and your kid's in care, and God knows what's going to happen to them once they go in.
Talk to me about those referrals from bitter neighbours or just busybodies who are nasty, and they wouldn't have the courage to approach you and say, hey, listen, I noticed young Thomas there the other day seemed to have no shoes on him, and it was raining and it was freezing. Is everything okay there? Oh, it is, yeah, he ran out of the house, no problem. That's the way it should be. But what about these busybodies who make referrals and they make phone calls? How serious is that? I mean, you described it there as somebody makes a phone call, and then before you know it, bang, they're on top of you. Explain how that works for us, will you, Emma?
Well, I think the system's got a bit overboard now, because originally schools, it was each school has what they call a child protection officer, which is a designated teacher that's basically a school busybody. She's looking for children that are malnutritioned. Maybe there's a chocolate bar missing out of the lunchbox. They're looking for children that are not appropriately dressed. They're looking for children that may have a gym kit missing. You take your child to the dentist. Your dentist is told to look out for your children having bad teeth. That's another referral to social care. They go to the doctors. The doctor's looking for bruises, looking for scratches. Your kids aren't safe anywhere, basically. Everybody now is being told to look for child abuse.
You know,
if kids eat candy. I mean, I was a sucker for making my kids clean their teeth all the time. But kids lose baby teeth, you get a wobbly tooth, you take the child to the dentist, your dentist may think that's too much sugar, he'll refer you to a social worker.
I'm going to read a few tweets. Traffic 2 has just been released, the sequel to the outstanding and groundbreaking Traffic. Go to PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk and buy a copy of Traffic 2. Do it today. Don't waste any time. Don't say, I'll do it tomorrow. Do it today. Go to the website and do it today. If you donate a few quid a month to the Richie Allen Show, don't donate any money this month. Buy Traffic 2. It's as simple as that. That's how important the film is to me. You can forego your regular donation to the Richie Allen Show, if you do make one, that is. Buy Traffic 2. Mark Morrison tweets, Richie, if the BBC had any morals, they would broadcast this film after years of covering up for their stars. That's a brilliant question. And I'm going to expand on that in a minute. I'm going to mention Netflix and one or two other, Amazon and one or two others, because some of these organisations should be showing or offering this film to their subscribers. Natalie is on. That's our friend Natalie, who runs a pub down south. She's tweeting about a couple she knows who've got a final court decision pending on Monday after a year of jumping through hoops and being lied to. There's massive amounts of tweets, and I've missed so many of them. Martin Oakes tweets, it's gone very quiet on the child abuse cover-up, hasn't it? It certainly has gone very quiet over the last few months. Nothing on it. Karen says, when they brought in the secret courts, you knew they were up to something. But of course, it covers so many sins, the secret courts. It's not just forced adoption. It's secret courts for people accused of terrorism and stuff like that. And yeah, I'll tell you what we'll do. It's a minute past the hour. Let's have the final clip. And this is about money. Traffic 2, made by Pete Middleton Pictures, is available now. And this is a clip dealing about the money, because this is what it comes down to, at least on one level. Listen to this.
In all honesty, the answer is money. You know, everybody gets paid from this. Everybody.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
The social services are running a profit organisation, and the government are in on it.
We have people like G4S moving into it.
Any company that wants to earn money has targets. Look at a sales company. Any sales company has targets, and you have to meet them targets.
There should not be financial incentives to take children into care. It should be based on evidence.
And the mum actually sat through the whole interview.
He was made up with me.
And she got to the end of it, and she'd bit her tongue, and she'd done really, really well.
We'll be in touch with all the successful candidates within a week or two. Have you got any questions?
I did happen to notice on your advert, bonus incentives available. Can you explain what they are for me?
Every time one of our social workers puts a child in foster care outside of the birth family, they receive a £30 bonus. Every time they adopt a child outside of the birth family, they get £150. And then there's other incentives. So, for example, if one social worker managed to place 10 children for adoption in a month, they'd get an extra bonus there. Well, that was the breaking point.
And she politely told them to shove it up her ass.
You're telling me that they received £60 for putting both my children in foster care, and then they're going to receive another £150 if they manage to adopt my oldest.
And that goes back to you talking earlier on about going undercover, Emma, to find out this information. Give our listeners, because there'll be a lot of people listening to this who maybe didn't hear you before. We pick up listeners all the time. Give us an idea of the scale of the numbers involved monetarily. What sort of money is involved? And I mean annually, and I mean nationally, what sort of numbers are we dealing with?
Well, in 2015, I got really deep into research. I mean, extensively, I was just living on the internet 24/7. And I came across government figures that were released that said £56 billion. £56 billion was ploughed into social care in a year. That's more than our own military defences get, £56 billion. I then sent that information to David Cameron, who refused. He told me that it would be sent to
Miliband.
That's the guy. That it'd be sent to him, then he would obviously respond to my email and my questions. Now, that was 2 years ago. that information has since disappeared off the internet.
£56 billion.
Billion pounds in a year. We know G4S have been putting up children's homes under alias names so that they could get these homes up for these children. And obviously we touched on that before, Richard, where they'll expect children in these homes because they'll want the money back that they've put in.
The money.
See, that's the incentive is, a social worker will say it costs money to put a child in care, but to get their annual budget every year, they've got to spend money. So they're constantly spending and spending and spending and spending to get more money. So the only way they can spend it is to take more children into care. That's the financial incentive. So if their budget's 10 million and they want 12 or 15 million, let's just grab ourselves some more kids and then we'll get a bigger budget next year.
We've opened the phone line if you've been affected by this at all, or if you'd like to speak with Emma and put a question to her, you can call 0161 408 2017 or you can Skype chat with Richie. It's pretty simple. 0161 408 2017 or Skype chat with Richie. It's as simple as that. If you see Skype and you see that it's do not disturb, ignore that. That's about the sounds more than anything. So it's 0161 408 2017. Let me read an email from Brian. Brian said, let me just get this up there now. Through his job, he knows somebody who fosters. And the person who fosters, fosters with his wife. And they have they get paid £500 a week per child. And they joked, he was joking about getting a kid for an easy £500 a week. We're going to go to the lines. And
hello.
We've got a caller live now. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I talking with?
My name's Mortimer.
So I didn't get that. Go ahead.
My name's David Mortimer.
Ah, David, welcome. David, how are you? Nice to hear from you. Say hello to Emma.
Hello, Emma.
I think we still have Emma there. I think she's still on the line with us there. She is indeed. David, go ahead, mate. What would you like to say there?
I think people need to read the consensus report. I've sent you a link to it and a link to the article that was published in The Guardian. When you've read those, you'll see that the problems with the child protection system were the child protection guidelines were changed by Bruce Clark in 2002. Pretty much changed the role of the state from helping parents to one where sort of.
Right, we've hang on a second there. We might have lost David there. Let me just see if we can get him back. Sorry about that. I'm going to try and reconnect with David another way. My apologies there for that.
Okay.
Emma, we'll try and get him back on there. 0161 408 2017. The phone system has been giving me one or two problems today. It's a pretty sophisticated system. Hopefully we'll be able to get him back on the line. While we're waiting for that, though, the email we had there, Emma, from Brian, who said that he works or comes into contact with a guy through work, and that guy fosters four children with his wife. They get £500 a week per child, he says, and that they were joking about getting a kid for an easy £500 a week. Brian said to the guy, it's not about the money, and the guy walked off. That's extraordinary.
Well, that's it all.
If people think that, if people think this is a handy way to make a few bucks, well then the whole system is completely flawed anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. I mean.
Right. We're having a problem with the phone system there, the phone setup.
Hello.
I'm hoping that we have Emma and David on the phone. David, welcome back. Emma, are you still with us? Emma's not with us.
Okay.
David, go ahead. Make your point, my friend, and we'll get Emma back and I'll figure out what's going on. It's probably my fault. Anyway, good to have you on the programme. Go ahead.
All right. The problem with child protection policies is they're not evidence-based. The wording of the Children's Act needs to be changed to require local authorities to collect and hold information on child abuse perpetrators, but for that information to be used to formulate evidence-based child protection policies. At the moment, they're based on children and leave children wide open to abuse. All of this is known to the government. If you look on my website, the UK Family Law Reform website, you'll see replies from various government departments, Ofsted, lots of different people. My MP also sent off a letter, and we got a letter back from the House of Lords confirming what I'm saying, that the Children's Act needs to be changed, and it hasn't been done. I've tried to bring this to the attention of the Labour Party in the UK, but at this moment in time, no one seems interested in child protection, even when they acknowledge what's wrong. The Conservatives have done nothing about it, despite pledging that they would do. So that's the problem. It's not that they don't know. They do know what's wrong. The problem is that they know and they've done nothing about it.
They've done nothing about it. The Children's Act of 1989, and then it was amended in 2004. It doesn't make any provision, does it? It doesn't
require local authorities to collect and hold information on child abuse perpetrators, and for them to use that information to formulate evidence-based child protection policies.
And David, there are no substantial or substantive definitions of what constitutes harm to a child. So in Emma's outstanding film, when they talk about your borderline personality disorder, you might be a danger, you might cause future emotional harm to your child.
Yeah.
None of this is legislated for. Well, none of it.
I've written to various local authorities because of the there is a ruling. I did try to bring people's attention to it. I'm just looking for it now. Again, it's on my website. If you look on my website, it's got an A to Z index. And if you click on the C and go to court, you will see an article. I'm just looking for it now. It's dated on the 20th of February, 2013. And it's titled, Significant Harm Threshold. Suspicions or Possibilities Are Not Enough. And if you read through that, basically what it is, it's a Supreme Court saying that suspicions and possibilities are not enough. So all these children that have been taken on a balance of probability that they might suffer harm in the future, local authorities have written back to me and said to me that they don't take children into care solely on the basis of future harm, because they're not allowed to, really, because of that ruling. So that ruling is quite important, and I have tried to point people to it, and I have sent it to local authorities and asked them, why are they taking children into care on the basis that they might suffer future harm when this ruling says that suspicions and possibilities are not enough? Why are they
taking children into care? Right, you've got us on in the background, so you might turn that down there. I'm trying to trying to reconnect with Emma.
I've been writing to the government over the last 20 years about various issues, and originally it was to do with the family courts, and then I got dragged into domestic violence, and then we got dragged into contact issues. The person that you really need to speak to, the person who is this moment in time, is one of the people who works within government in the background, is a guy called Oliver Syriacs. He writes all the Conservatives' speeches for them, and basically, I believe he was the one who's recently, there was a study recently produced called the Baby Bond Study, which I think we're going to hear more about as we come towards the next election. But basically, that's supposed to be a collection of all the studies that have been done on child contact and bonding, but it actually excludes one of the most important ones, which was done and published in a couple of years ago, where all of the child protection, well, say all of them, over 100 child protection experts around the world, all agreed that children, this is all to do with the consent, this is all to do with child contact. Let me go and find it for you.
While you're doing that, David, I think we have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Richie. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear. Who am I speaking with?
My name's Rob Allen, and I'm living on the Wirral.
Rob, welcome. And Emma Abitson has joined us. We sorted it out. Emma, welcome back.
Richard.
Thanks be to Jesus. thanks, Emma. Stay there for a second. The producer of Traffic 2 is back. Yeah. Rob on the Wirral, welcome to the show, mate. What would you like to say?
Well, I don't know if I'm going slightly off topic. I've just got, as most of your listeners, I'm sure, concur, grave concerns about how it is that the people in power, local government and national government, seem to deliberately conspire against our interests. And I can't understand, I can't quite get my head around how so many are so complicit. One area I have concern is where these people get their money from. And I did a little bit of research, and it does seem to be a bit of a common link. There's only one other nation, and I'm not trying to go off on a right-wing tangent, but there does seem to be appear only one country in the world that holds individual sway over both Labour and Conservative. And it's quite interesting. There are websites you can go to and look at your own MP and just get a feel for, because it's publicly listed, where they get their donations from. And I can't help but think that that's the tip of the iceberg. And the fact that they're so particular about making society worse rather than better, and on every level, then without going into the money thing, I can't help but think there's undue influence, and that concerns me more than anything else. I'm trying to identify the snake, the head of the snake, if you
Rob, as a human being first and foremost, when you hear stories told by the courageous men and women like Emma Ibbitson and the many families who spoke with us, how do you feel about that? When this is your country, Rob, you're in the Wirral there. This is your country. This is supposed to be a great country, a country, you know, of justice and of fairness to people. When you hear about children being taken away from parents for no good reason and secret courts, how does that make you feel? What do you want to do when you hear that?
Well, I'll level with you. I'm absolutely terrified when I hear about that and so many other wrongdoings right across the board. It's at every level, whether it's the social services, the health service, the police. Brian Gerrish talks a lot about common purpose, and quite rightfully so, because they're sort of lying in the background of all of this. But what's driving it? That's what frustrates me. I'll give you a quick insight. Not War and Peace, but I'm off work at the moment because I was lucky enough to start becoming more aware, for want of a better word, of what's actually going on. Started connecting lots of dots, and it overwhelmed me. I'm now off work, and make it quite clear to the people that come and visit me from the employment support, the Department of Work and Pensions and Maximus, I just levelled with them straight to the pancake and said, this is what I think. And they subsequently referred me to a wonderful element of the NHS called the Early Intervention Team, who I can't rate highly enough. But I had an issue with alcohol, which I'm overcoming now. But the whole thing has freaked me out. And to go back to doing what I did for a living, I can't focus. I'm absolutely, it's manifested itself in my mind, the country that we're living in and the world as a whole, because when you join the dots, as David says often,
your psychological...
You come to the... I read sociology at university and...
Which is very interesting. So what your psychological well-being, your well-being has been affected by the awareness of what's going on. Rob, I want to keep it on topic. I'd be glad to have you back on the programme again to explore this in more detail, but I want to keep it on the topic of forced adoption specifically today. Listen, it was great to hear from you, and I'm sincere when I say that. We'll be doing a phone-in show again soon. I'll invite you on, and we can talk about some of these issues, particularly Maximus and the DWP. I'd love to get into that with you. So look, thanks for phoning. I want to get into more of forced adoption with Emma and with David Mortimer. Thanks for the call, Rob.
No problem, Richie. Thanks for taking it.
Not at all, mate. Have a great evening. Thanks, Rob, there. Don't think I'm cutting Rob off, folks. Interesting guy, but I want to keep it a forced adoption. David Mortimer, stay with us there.
Yep.
Emma, just before, David, I want to just to get Emma's thoughts on that. Emma, the knowledge of this going on, not just this, but everything else, is making people sick. What do you say to that? I mean, you're not going to be surprised by that, right?
Well, no, I mean, I know people sometimes are a bit surprised at how not cold I am. It's so clinical to it all now, Richie, and that's scary. People forming, they're in tears, they're heartbroken. Obviously, I have total empathy for them, being through that myself, but when they tell me something, there's no shock there for me anymore. There's no shock. I can say, oh, I expected them to do that, or that was expected. Oh, is that why they've done that? And that scares me, that people can become like that themselves. It can become so clinical for everyone else that they just accept it as normal.
You become impervious to it. David, yes. David Mortimer, first of all, say hello to one another. David, say hello to Emma and vice versa. Go ahead there.
Hello, Emma.
Hello, David.
Are you aware that John Hemming put out some videos, I think it was the Christmas before last, where he was basically saying that the social services, all the information that they're collecting on children care, shows that that's probably the worst, you know, that it's not the best to be, and that they would actually be better off with their parents. And basically he was saying the only reason that they can play with it is because parents are allowing them. My MP said to me, the correct procedure for people to complain about the social services is basically they must go through the three-stage complaints process, as most people seem to know, and then you go through the local government ombudsman who can look into the social services. But it's always going to come back to what's wrong, or... And like I say, you know, the Children's Act does not require local authorities.
No, but David, let me jump back in there. If a child has been taken, now with the greatest respect to you, and I've read the stuff that you've sent me, and I'm very impressed by it. What bloody good, and I'm not aiming this at you now, I'm aiming this at the authorities. What good is the ombudsman if your child has been taken and your child has been placed with a family? What good is it then?
I don't know of that many people who have actually used the ombudsman. John Hemming says that out of every 1,000 children that are taken into care, I think only three out of every 1,000 actually get their children back. So it's a very small percentage, and probably they're the parents who can afford to spend vast amounts of money, getting the best legal advice that they can. But, you know, on the whole, this is what I'm saying. He's saying that the social services are aware. All the information they're collecting shows that children are worse off being in care.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. He says that in Traffic 2. He says that to Cookie in Traffic 2. Emma, come back on that. When your children were taken, Emma, wrongfully, for no reason whatsoever, when your children were taken, what recourse did you have? What did you try to do? And what are... the many interviewees that you've met, what have they tried to do to stop this and to report these social services, these criminals? What have they done? You do?
Personally, I'll start there with my own case. I mean, we went through the old court, 26-week court family hearing process. In the May, we were told that they'd remain in full-time foster care. I immediately stamped my feet and said I want an appeal. My barrister wrote to my solicitor and said an appeal is futile. It's absolutely pointless. There's no even a complete waste of money even if she attempted an appeal. And I'm thinking, what do I do now? I tried to go through that process myself, and as we've touched on it before, Richard, we couldn't afford to do that.
Yeah.
It cost a lot of money. I went to the social care complaints department, as they call it. I took it to Odell there. Three level stages of complaint. I went to the government ombudsman. They refused. They said we didn't provide enough evidence. We provided them more than enough evidence to say that, yes, these social workers have acted immorally, they've acted illegally, and my children have been removed for no reason whatsoever. They refused to even look into it. It was a case closed.
A lot of people don't understand when they go to court, when they go to the family courts and an accusation is made,
A judge won't actually check to see whether that accusation is true or not, and that's not his job. His job is simply to judge what's stated. And the minute an accusation is made, whether that's, you know, parents arguing over their children or a social worker making accusations about parents, once that social worker has made that accusation, a judge has no choice but to side with caution. And that's why children end up getting taken into care at the end of the day, because they have no choice once an accusation is made, but they don't check.
What they say there, David, is what they say is the judge only has to believe 51% of what goes into the court hearing. The judge only has to believe 51%. So if you walk in with a broken leg and she says you broke your arm, you broke your arm.
Well, social workers, as far as the courts are concerned, are, if you like, expert witnesses. That's why they will listen to what a social worker says and not to what a parent says, because the social worker is the expert. And as far as the judge is concerned, like I say, once an accusation is made, they have no, you know, they have no choice. They have to make side on caution, so they will make a ruling to safeguard the child. And that happens, and that's why children get taken into care, to safeguard them, apparently. And that's why so many fathers and mothers, apparently, these days, are denied contact in residence, because once accusations are made by one of the other parents, or in this case the social workers, then that's basically case closed. The problem is with the courts, is the courts, the family court judges, I'm one of the only people, I know one other person who's actually written and asked the local courts, how many cases of perjury have the judges in the family courts actually referred to the police? Because the police won't investigate accusations of perjury in this. The judge hearing the case actually forwards the paperwork to the police and tells them to do so. Mm. Yeah, so that's another thing that needs to be done. Family court judges need to start referring cases of perjury to the police, which is something that they don't seem. I checked with my local court, and they looked back through the records. I believe it was over the last 5 years, and they found one case in 5 years that had been referred to the police.
With no evidence whatsoever to support what I'm going to say, I'm going to say it anyway. It's got to be said. And I'm putting this to both of you. You first, Emma. You have to follow the money, but you have to follow the money down the rabbit hole. And not what's printed in the papers, not the figures that you get officially. It's got to be the case. We've seen this in the United States. Now, hang on a second now. In the United States, there were a number of scandals where judges were sentencing young offenders to young offenders institutions because they were getting kickbacks from the Corrections Corporation of America. Emma Abitson, we can't prove, when I say I'm not speaking for you, I'm speaking for me, I can't prove this, but it is absolutely obvious to me that some judges, not all of them, some judges must be taking kickbacks. They must be, Emma.
They are. I'm not saying all of them, because I don't want to get...
No, but some of them must be.
But some are sitting as directors on adoption panels, some are sitting as directors on foster care agencies. Now, to me, that's a conflict of interest, and that is a nice little bit of money in your back pocket if you rubber stamp this care order.
David?
Yeah, I think what people need to... I've always said that forced adoption should be the last option given the poor outcomes and cost. When you look at the outcomes of the children that go into care and how many end up in prison that have been in care, and how many being dragged into prostitution and all the rest of it. You know, it's not just the costs, the legal costs of taking the child, or the costs of the child being looked after by foster carers or wherever they go, which can be extremely expensive. It's all the other costs. Like I say, I think the percentage of them that end up in prison, is it about 30%? It's a massive amount who end up... Sorry?
Say again, Emma.
I think it's actually slightly higher than that. I think it's about 40-45%.
Depending on what you read, there's various figures, and, you know, over the years these figures go up and down. And I mean, there are also studies that say that children are better off with troubled parents than they are in foster care.
Well, that's fact.
So,
David, we leave it there for now. I'll invite you back on again soon. Me and you will have a chat.
Okay.
And thanks for sending me the information that you send me. It doesn't go unnoticed. Thanks for coming on tonight. And let's make an appointment for me and you to have a chat about this at another stage, because I'm interested in what you have to say. Thanks, David. And I'll retweet your website and stuff. That's David Mortimer there, who called into the programme. You can call in 0161 408 2017. The producer of the outstanding documentary Traffic 2, made by Pete Middleton Pictures. Go to petemiddletonpictures.co.uk. She is Emma Abitson, and she's on the line to us now. The time, I think, is exactly half past the hour. The programme has flown by. Thank God we sorted out that issue with the phones after all that build-up today. If you'd like to say hello to Emma Abitson, if you'd like to put a point across to her, call now 0161 408 2017 or Skype chat with Richie. Chat with Richie. You see, Emma, some of my old peers from my old mainstream radio days, you know, they'll be saying, that's a really terrible wrong thing to say, Richie, to suggest that members of the judiciary are taking bribes. But Emma, I'll tell you what, we'll leave that for a minute. We have another caller joining us. Caller, welcome to the programme. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi, you're live on the programme. Who are we speaking with?
Oh, it's Dean Smith. Dean Smith, Richie.
Dean, welcome to the programme. Say hello to Emma, mate.
Thank you. Hello, Emma.
Hello.
Do amazing work. Absolutely brilliant work.
Thank you.
No worries. No, a couple of points, Richie. It's from a sort of different background, slightly different, but I've run a care home for people with learning disabilities. So I'm a registered manager. So I've dealt with social workers, numerous ones over the years, and I've seen corruption all the way through. I went through a closure of a care home in sort of 2008, I think it was. This is in the Grimsby area, and I saw people that lived in the care home with learning disabilities given no choice of where to live next, and I saw social workers driving round in the cars of the private company was about to take over the people that... So there's 20 people that lived there. They sort of... they stole them, basically, for want of a better word. They stole 20 people.
They stole 20 people?
A whole 20 people, Richie, yeah. A whole 20 people. So, basically, the council at the time was working in cahoots with a private company, and there were certain people. So they stole those people. The people that lived there were not given a choice of where to go next. They weren't given a choice of, we've got this provider here or we've got this provider there or any other provider. They all went to one provider.
They were bought, basically.
They were bought out, yeah, basically, yeah. Now, there was problems with the care home at the time. I still work for the same company now, but the home itself, I used to work there and sort of left 3 or 4 years before it got bad. It did get bad, so I'm not arguing that there were problems there, but for 20 people to not be given an option and just go to one company and then see how the sort of the network within worked, to take all 20 without an option to a certain private company was a bit bad.
It sounds very much like it completely staggered you. You never saw anything like that, right?
It blew my mind. It really blew. I still work with a lot of people. And believe me, Richie, there's a lot of people. I've got social workers now that I work with. And they are, I've got two or three that are amazing people. Don't get me wrong. They've got a proper heart. They believe in what they do. I work closely with them. But I talk to them a lot. I've got one, a friend of mine, and she's become a friend, to be honest with you. And she has got a heart. She's got heart and soul. And, she does the right thing all the time, and she's under pressure from her bosses from within that tell her what to do, what she needs to do. And she often phones me up and we talk. So there are people out there within the social work system who are doing a good thing. They're doing a good job.
Dean, let's put that to Emma. Emma, imagine a scenario, and I know you've never said to me over the last 2 years or more, just over 2 years, you've never said to me, you know, they're all bastards. You never have done. There must be men and women working within it, and they must be absolutely disgusted by what they see. I'm talking about social workers. So they have two choices. Choice number one is walk away from it. Choice number two is try to do some good within it. In other words, try to prevent people from having their children taken away. Have you come across any of that?
So much of the latter, Richie. I've had student social workers who the main incentive was, I'm going to go in and I'm going to change the system. And within a year, 2 years, they've quit because they said, I can't. They are the broken people. They said, I've gone in, I've tried. My manager's giving me grief. My team supervisor's on my back. I've got to do as they say. I don't want to do that. I'm being threatened that I'll get fired. I've got responsibilities. I can't do it. I'm quitting. I can't. I tried to change it and I failed. And they do go in genuinely with a good heart. But it's them that stay with it. The ones that say, I actually don't think this is really a bad job. Yet I want to stick with this. Yet I'm going to continue lying. I'm going to continue down here the way. Because no one cares. No one gives a shit if I continue to lie and have these babies taken away. So I'm just going to stick at it. And then the genuine ones that want to are the ones that are forced out through just peer pressure for not complying.
Dean, what does it mean to you when you hear a mother, and she's a mother first and a filmmaker second, when you hear stories like that? I don't know if you've had any experience with it yourself. I haven't. How does that make you feel? I'm not trying to be, you know, to make people emotional, or I'm not looking for cheap sentiment here, but I can't live with this. I can't live in a country where this goes on. What do you think, Dean?
Well, I can only echo what she says there, Richie, because that's exactly the sort of things that my friend says, working within the system, the very same thing. The girl with a heart, she tries, she does her best. She's got no support from managers. She's got she brings me for support. You know, it shouldn't be that way. And of course, I've got children myself. So your worst absolute nightmare. I've got two sons myself. So yeah, how Emma's gone through it and dealt with it. I suppose people have got to take inspiration from that. Is the only way I can express it, I guess. But that's.
Listen,
that's
thanks for calling up, Dean. Really important call that, mate. Really important to hear what you said about those 20 people basically being spirited away and taken possession of by the private sector. I mean, I know that goes on. And to hear somebody put it like that, it's vitally important. Thanks for doing it, mate, and thanks for listening to the programme. I really mean that.
No worries. You're welcome. I'll always listen, but even if it's on mainly on the download.
Yeah. All right, mate. I really appreciate your call. Thanks, Dean.
No worries. Good luck to Emma as well with the movie and stuff.
Fantastic. Lovely stuff. And just to mention again, I am going to take a quick break now, by the way. I'm going to take a very quick break. Just to mention, Traffic 2, which is why we're here today talking about this subject, primarily to promote this outstanding film. I am not getting anything from Pete Middleton Pictures for promoting this. There's always a sneaky, sarcastic, dirty-minded, filthy bastard who'll send you an email like the one I just had a minute ago asking how much of a retainer am I on from Pete Middleton Pictures. That's disgusting. I wouldn't take money from people like Emma Ibbitson and Pete Middleton, even if they offered it to me. Promoting this film because it's vital that every parent, every would-be parent in this country sees it. Emma, you've loads to say on that. Stay there. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls with Emma right up to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. AlternateCurrentRadio.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio. Back in a minute.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole-of-market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Road to Ruin. But today I'm issuing a critical new warning to all British listeners. Britain is under attack, and your personal and financial security is in grave danger. To find out why, visit britainunderattack.co.uk now. The threat of this devastating attack increases every day, and it's crucial you act before it's too late. To see what you can do about it, visit britainunderattack.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. See my full warning at britainunderattack.co.uk today.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
All eyes on Manchester, Saturday, March 4th, 2017. The Awakening at Bowler's Exhibition Centre, Manchester. Join the stars of the Ancient Aliens TV series and the leading figures in the field of ufology and ancient alien theories. Eric Von Daniken, author of the hit book Chariots of the Gods, and Emmy Award winner Linda Moulton Howe. Get tickets now at www.awakeningufo.com.
Welcome back to the programme. It's exactly 20 minutes to the top of the hour. The producer of Traffic 2, Emma Abidson, is still with me. We've also got a caller who called in there just as we took a break. Caller, welcome to the programme. Whom are we speaking with?
Hi, Richie. It's Polly. I've spoken to you before.
Polly, welcome back. Good to hear from you, Polly. Thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Well, first of all, I'd say, like to say hello to Emma.
Hello, Polly.
I think you're an amazing lady, and I don't know where you get your strength from, but, you know, you must get it from somewhere, because I know what it's like, you know, to go through a load of really bad stuff in your life. But I just don't know how you get through it, and I think you're amazing. I've heard you on the show before, and, you know, Richie's had other guests on. What I wanted to talk about was when I was on the show last time, I was talking to Richie about the fact, you know, when I was a child, I suffered from abuse and I couldn't have children of my own. And after I got divorced, I thought about the possibility of fostering because, you know, I've survived abuse and I thought, well, you know, I might have something to give, you know, to support other people.
Go ahead, Polly.
Oh, right. And so I kind of thought about it and I thought, well, yeah, you know, I've got a lot to give. You know, I'm a strong person. I've survived, you know, going through abuse. And I thought, well, you know, that'd be great. You know, I've got my own home. I could, you know, give a child or a couple of children a loving environment. And it wasn't based on the fact that you get loads of money for it. It was based on the fact that, you know, I'd like to help children that I felt were in a vulnerable situation. And then obviously as time's gone on over the last few years with all the revelations about children being taken away from their parents for basically nothing, I mean, it just horrified me. And the whole idea of wanting to do it now, I've just backed away from it completely.
Put you off, Polly. Let's get Emma's thoughts on that. That's an interesting one, Emma.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you find as well with a lot... What, like what Polly was saying there, that she obviously went through a lot of abuse herself as a child. I mean, we find within the system now that if you've been in the system yourself, they're going to take your children off you anyway. There's a lot of parents that said, well, I were in foster care because my mum was a twat. Sorry, Richie, you're wrong.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
As she said, because my mum did this to me, I went into care, and because I was in care, they're now taking my children. So you get... They, social workers call it a generation of abuse that they're trying to prevent. They're saying, you were abused, you're going to abuse. That's their philosophy.
Is that blanket, Emma, if a young woman who was a victim of abuse, who is now an adult and she becomes pregnant and she's about to have a child, she's going to be targeted because she went through the system?
There's I'm not saying every single
right,
person,
but
a large majority will be. Well, I was in care. I was, I was maybe sexually abused, I was maybe physically abused. You may have played up while you were in care, you may have been a bit of a mischievous child. Because of that, you are unable to parent. It comes out that way. Your mum couldn't look after you, so you certainly won't be able to look after this small child. So let's just take it away now and make sure that it gets a better life. And you'll be fine. And then she'll fall pregnant again and we'll do it again. But all she's wanting is to prove to the social worker, look, I can be a good mum. Let me be a mum. And they say no, because you were abused.
What's staggering to me, just before we go back to Polly again, what's staggering to me watching Traffic 2 is learning about how it's becoming more and more common. The baby is taken from the delivery room. And yeah, you get into this in Traffic 2. I can't imagine the evil of that.
I can just jump in there, Richard, and say we've talked to midwives.
You've got midwives, yeah.
Yeah, we've talked to midwives and they've said, well, that's never happened on our ward. We do have social workers come in who say as soon as that baby's born, we need that baby, and they will sit and they will wait for that baby to be born. And the midwife goes into the room, takes the baby from mum, passes it to the social worker, who obviously then walks off with the newborn. But they won't tell the midwife what for. They just say that baby is in imminent risk.
So the midwife doesn't have a clue. No. Just Polly, finally from you, Polly. That's an extraordinary thing, you know, what you said there. It's something you would have considered. You've got a lot of love. I mean, you sound like you've got a lot of love in you. You're an intelligent woman. You'd be good for any child. But you've put it away. You've put it off because you don't know who that child is and whether or not that child should be in care, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my childhood, it wasn't in the family, and I wasn't in the care system. And in fact, you know, one of my parents is dead now, and the other parent doesn't actually know what happened. And, you know, I've just sort of got through it and gone for counselling and everything else and done it myself. But my mum suffered from anxiety when I was a child. My mum had a baby that suffocated back in 1960. And, you know, we could have been in that category where we could have been taken away when we were kids. Mm. That didn't happen to us. And, you know, for me, it was just, I thought, you know, I could help somebody to grow up and have and know that they can have a different life.
But you don't know who they're going to be. You don't know who they're going to be. This is the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But the whole idea, and particularly the one that upset me the most, Richie, was the girl you had on last year who gave birth at home and the midwife caused a problem because she wanted a car was parked on double yellow lines or something.
Yeah.
And then, do you remember that lady who was on and they took the child off her, didn't they, you know?
Yeah, Leonardo and Yolanda, yeah, very strange case, that, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was crying on that. And I mean, I've never had any children, I couldn't have any, but I know what it's like to lose something that you love dearly. And it broke my heart listening to that, actually. You know, I cried all the way through that. And for me, the whole idea of me opening my home and giving a loving environment to a child who might be vulnerable, who needs help, the idea behind, you know, what's gone on and, you know, with the revelations I've heard on your show about, you know, they're just taken away for nothing.
Well, so many children have been taken away from nothing. It ironically prevents somebody like you who might be able to help a child who's been beaten by his mother or father, who's been abused in his home. Polly, I've got 3 minutes left and I want to spend them chatting with Emma. Thanks for calling back in, Polly. Lovely to hear from you. That's an incredible bit of information. Thank you very much for that.
And all the best, Emma. Keep your chin up. And you're always in my prayers. I think you're amazing.
Thank you.
That's wonderful stuff. Thank you, Polly. We've got about 4 minutes left on this, Emma, so they're yours. Isn't that an extraordinary thing there, Polly? You know, I would have adopted, or I would have fostered, but because I know through people like Emma Ibbitson and others, I can't do it in good conscience because I don't know what child I'm getting.
You see, then that's where they tend to twist it back on us. I mean, I get attacked on social media by social workers who say, because of your films, we can't find foster placements for these children. These children are going, they're getting suffered, we're having to leave children in abused homes. And I'm like, do not blame me for that. You're taking children illegally and immorally has put you in that situation. All I've done is show people exactly what you've done. So you can't, I do feel guilty for that, Richie. I do, like, with Polly says she'd love to foster, but because of these babies being taken, she doesn't know if the kid she's going to get is genuine, and I do feel some guilt for that sometimes.
But there's no reason why you should feel any guilt from it. What you've done with your two films is told the truth, Emma, and the truth can never be wrong. There's never any reason not to tell the truth. There is no good reason to withhold the truth. And if it means that some genuine kids are stuck because eventually they run out of foster families because people like you eventually get this information to people, well, tough shit, really. I'm sorry, but tough shit if that makes things change, you know? Yeah, yes.
Yeah. You say exactly what he said to me, to stop beating yourself up over it, and it is tough shit. We've told the truth, and if I don't like it, well...
Yeah, because nobody wants to see or hear about a child who has been abused by his parents or her parents. We don't want to hear that there isn't any foster places for the child. We don't want to hear that. But ultimately, we can't tolerate what's the state kidnapping, state-sponsored kidnapping of children to feed a £56 billion a year industry. We can't put up with that.
But do you know, the one question I don't think anyone's been able to answer for me yet, which is, cases such as Baby P and Danielle Pelker, Victoria Kalimbe, all had social care intervention, but said, obviously they left these children where they were, but yet, take mine, or anybody else's children, immediate foster placement for them children. So if it's so easy to find foster placement for, say, my daughter, why could they not find one for Baby P? Why could they not find one for Danielle Pelker, Victoria Kalimbe, and so on and so on and so on? It's because these kids are damaged.
What Emma is just talking about there is two of the most notorious cases in UK history, where babies were battered to be Jesus and beyond by their parents, and social services knew about it. And interventions should have been made at the earliest possible opportunity, and they weren't, and children were tortured to death. And we're talking to a gifted producer, a wonderfully intelligent woman, a fantastic human being, who had a daughter taken away from her because the daughter acted in a film that was commissioned for road traffic safety. This is the world we live in. Live with that. I mean, this is the thing, you see. This is what drives me mad. And you see the state of Baby P, and you see some of I saw some of those pictures. How could they not have looked after that child?
Because, like Cookie says, Richie, would you really buy a bunch of battered bananas, or would you go for the nice ripe one?
And this is why they bury stories of abuse in care. Because they don't want any... When they're moving kids around, they don't want family C to find out that family B were sexually abusing the kid.
Mm. We need perfection.
Go ahead, Emma, go ahead.
Now, say, if you look at the foster care adverts, I've always said to Pete, you will never see on a foster care advert, in a bus shelter, in a bus stop, on a billboard, a child with a black eye or a broken tooth. They're always perfectly groomed with a big grin on the face saying, so-and-so needs a home. That's the appeal. The image is the appeal.
Now, my learned friend, I'm putting you on the spot. You've got 30 seconds to tell people why they should go to PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk and purchase a copy of Traffic 2. I've tweeted the link out there and I've mentioned it several times. It's on Facebook as well. Why do people need to see this film, Emma?
If they want to know the truth, they need to see Traffic 2. There's nothing... I'm not boasting it up because it's my film. I'm not bragging about it because it's mine. If you want to really know the complete and utter truth of what's happening to children in the UK, you need to see Traffic 2.
Thanks for coming back on the programme. The film is a triumph. It belongs on CBS 60 Minutes. It belongs on Dispatches. Just quickly, will you be sending it to the likes of Netflix and places like that and offering it to them?
We offered it to one channel, for which I shall not name, and I was told it was too controversial for their viewing.
Too controversial, eh? There isn't a single claim made in the film that can be challenged. Nobody is libelled. It's absolute impeccable journalism, and you're told, it's too controversial for us there. We don't want it.
Mm.
We don't need them, Emma. We don't need them. Go to PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. Buy traffic too. Thanks so much for coming back on the programme.
Thank you for having me on, Richie.
It's an honour. Pass on our congratulations to Pete, to Cookie, to everybody who took part in the making of the film. It's a triumph, and I'm delighted to be chatting to you about it, and I know it's going to sell massive amounts of copies, and I know it's going to change lives, Emma. Thanks so much.
No worries, Richie. I'll just a quick note, Richie, if I can be a bit cheeky.
Go ahead.
I would say if anybody needs any help with social care or fighting social workers, just to go on PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. We have a whole help section where people can talk to who we have now, administrators who can help you with your case and things like that. So
nothing cheeky about that at all. It's important information. PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. Go to the help section if these issues are affecting you. Huge success to the film going forward, and it's going to make a huge difference in people's lives, as the first one did. Emma, you're a legend. Look after yourself. Talk real soon.
Yeah, you too, Richie.
Bye for now.
Bye.
The outstanding Emma Ibbotson on the line to us there from her home in Yorkshire. It is exactly 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Thanks to the callers, and a lot of people tried to call in there and didn't make it. We've got the capacity to take about 8 calls on air at one time, but something went wrong today, and it's probably my fault. I'm not the most technically gifted man of all time, but my great friend and colleague, the Fab Radio 2, Fab Radio International man himself, Paul Ripley, when I get Paul around, I'll get Paul to tweak it a bit. So thanks to those of you who did call in. To those of you who rang and rang and rang, but I couldn't take you on, even though I tried to, I really tried to answer your calls and take you into the group call, because you've got 12 lines coming in and I couldn't do that. I'm really sorry about that. I'll get it sorted. Next time you do a phone in, it'll be okay. It'll work. That was Wednesday's Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. Massive thanks again to Emma Ibbotson. If you only spend money on one film just this month, if you're a cinema goer, spend money on Traffic 2. The film can be purchased at PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk, produced by Emma Ibbotson, directed by Pete Middleton himself, and narrated and introduced by the star. And he is a star. He's not a star. He's not the star of Traffic, the information is, but he's a terrific interviewer and a really compassionate guy, Cookie Keaton. The film is Traffic 2, PeteMiddletonPictures.co.uk. That's it for the programme today. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow, Thursday, at the usual time, 7 p.m, the brand new usual time of 7 p.m. GMT. I want to say a big thanks to my friend Simon Stewart for all the work on the YouTube channel. All of her interviews are archived even on YouTube. Aaron Calland has just about got richieallen.co.uk ready. Huge kudos to Aaron for doing that. This programme, as always, was produced, edited and introduced by me, Richie Allen. And do stay in touch with our broadcast partners. There are terrific programmes beginning now on alternatecurrentradio.com and on fabradiointernational.com as well. And please bookmark and stay in touch with the brilliant davidicke.com/headlines. You and I will talk again tomorrow at the same time, 7 p.m. Until then, look after yourselves and one another. Bye for now. See you later.
We have all the time in the world. Time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world. If that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way we'll find with the cares of the world far behind us, we have all.
just for love. Nothing more, nothing less. Oh.